The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. It takes a certain kind of brave to run a business. We see it, we back it.
But first this morning we're joined by Tánaiste Leo Varadkar, the new Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment. I won't ask you if you're tempted to join enter our competition, Tánaiste. But first of all, the very sad news of the passing of Jack Charlton. A lot of very, very fond memories in Ireland. And you would have been quite young in Italia 90.
Yeah, I heard the news just a moment ago over in the canteen before I came over, and I have to say I'm filled with sadness, and of course my condolences go to his family and friends. But he was, I think, Ireland's most loved Englishman, and indeed an honorary Irish citizen in his own right. And it just brought back all those memories, you know, of Italia 90. I remember the penalty shootout at Romania. I remember exactly where I was watching in my front room in my parents' house. And it was a time when in Ireland we didn't have all that much to cheer about or be proud about and didn't win much. And I think that really lifted the nation. And it's a real loss. But he had a great life at the same time.
Well, of course, that era is often described as the beginning of a sort of turning point in Irish society and the Irish economy. We're facing into a new challenge. In relation to the stimulus package that the government is considering at the moment, it's due, I understand, to come out the week after next. And I know that you've had meetings with representatives from small business and from state bodies yesterday about it. Expectations are very high. Will the expectations of small businesses in particular be met by this stimulus package when it's announced?
Well, I think for the last 3 years, it was a real privilege to lead the country as Taoiseach through some difficult times and turning points. The first phase of Brexit, some major social changes with the referendums, and also then COVID more recently. And my mission now as Tánaiste Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment is to lead the economic recovery, bring Ireland through this very difficult period, which is ahead economically, and to make sure that we bounce back and that we have a rapid recovery and not another lost decade like we experienced in the past. So I think when we talk about the July stimulus, it is important not to see it as the only thing the government has done or will do. You know, there have been a lot of interventions already, for example, the wage subsidy scheme, the pandemic unemployment payment, warehousing tax liabilities.
Sounds like you're playing down expectations ahead of it.
No, I wouldn't say that, but I'm trying to put them in their particular context. So that's what's done. What we're going to do in July is some more. And then in October, at the same time as the budget, we'll publish a 3-year new economic plan or national economic plan. So essentially what the July stimulus is about, it's about a limited number of actions that we can implement quickly that will make a difference in the short term. And then we'll do the medium to longer term things in October.
How limited? You have said that it would be radical and far reaching. To some extent, we're going to be playing catch up with the UK. Over there, the Chancellor Rishi Sunak has already announced a slashing of VAT from 20% to 5%, free meal vouchers, discounts, a £2 billion youth workplace programme. Are we going to see measures like that?
I think what you're going to see is a package of scale and one that can be deployed at speed. And that's what's necessary to help businesses open, to keep the ones that are open, and to get people back to work. In terms of the quantum, the size of the package, if you adjust for population, you'll be looking at something similar. But the composition of the package will be different. So
the British one is £30 billion. So based on the size of the economy, we're about...
If you divide by 60 and multiply by 5 for our population, you'd be getting something in around 2.5 to 3 billion. But it all often depends how you measure these things, of course, because you know when you add in loan guarantees and so on, maybe higher than that.
But just on that point, the small business recovery plan, which has been lobbying for grants and a bailout in relation to this, reckons we need. Small business needs 15 billion. The tourism industry reckons it needs a billion. IBEC have said that 7 out of 10 businesses don't have enough cash to go beyond August, and we're looking at mass insolvencies. 2 to 3 billion.
But that, I suppose that's kind of the point I'm making. Is that this is. We're not going to fire all our bullets at the same time. We've done a lot already. You know, the wage subsidy scheme alone has cost £2 billion so far. I couldn't tell you how much the pandemic unemployment payment has cost, but something similar, and the warehousing of tax. This is the next, if you like, set of bullets that we're going to fire, and then there'll be more in October. And I think that's the right approach. If you add up what every sector wants, I think it adds up to something like 40 or 50 billion. And that's before you put in things like the additional costs to healthcare, the additional costs to education.
Well, maybe that's what we're going to need. Former Central Bank Governor Patrick Honohan is right writing this morning in the Irish Times, and he says the state must deploy full financial strength to ensure recovery.
I broadly agree with Professor Honohan in what he's saying. He's saying that this is a time to borrow. This is a time to borrow to invest in our health services, make sure we cushion the blow in terms of incomes and to business, and then borrow to re-stimulate our economy. But I think almost every reasonable person would accept, including as Professor Honohan does, that there is a limit to that.
Fire the bullets now, though? Why wait? You don't want to fire all the bullets now. Surely we're already playing catch-up because other countries have already announced stimulus packages.
They have, and we have too, and this is the next one. And in October, there will be more, and there has to be, because not only is this pandemic still evolving, in October we'll have a better idea as to where we're going in terms of Brexit, which is another particular risk to our economy. But just to give you an idea of where we are in terms of our fiscal strategy, and this really touches on what Professor Honohan was saying, we're going to borrow. As Minister Donoghue said, we're going to borrow this year somewhere between 25 and 30 billion. That's a huge amount of money being injected into the economy. It needs to be done. But we also need to think about the medium term effects of that as well. Because we are a country that has a very high debt. We don't want to be a country that has a very high deficit as well. Now, we're not trying to be the best fiscal boys in the class, not at all. But we want to have a deficit that's similar to our peers, about middle of the range in the Eurozone. Because if we get ourselves in a situation where we're the country with the highest debt and the highest deficit, or in that group of countries with really high debts and really high deficits, when the interest rate environment changes, and it will change, it always does, we'll find ourselves exposed again. So we're not going to repeat the mistakes of the past. But in terms of the July stimulus package, really, we're looking at, you know, three or four big things. So one thing will be what we do with the wage subsidy scheme. Employers tell me that's really important to them in terms of keeping people on.
What will you do with it? Are you talking about extending it?
Yeah.
Changing it?
Again, the decisions are not made, and I don't want to, out of respect to my colleagues, I don't want to be announcing things when decisions haven't even been made yet. But, for example, you'll see in the UK that they're going to end their wage subsidy scheme in October. What we have to decide is how long we're going to extend it for. It's supposed to end in August, but it's not going to end in August. So we have to decide how long will we extend it for, and then also will we make modifications, for example, by allowing people who weren't on the payroll in February to come into the scheme, and then how it might be phased out and over what period, but it certainly will be extended. The other area that we're looking at is grants. If you do compare us with other countries, we've done much better in terms of what we're offering people who've lost their jobs in welfare. £100 a week, for example, in Northern Ireland and Britain, €350 here. What we've done well on as well as our wage subsidy scheme compares favourably with other countries. Where we've probably fallen down is on grants.
Businesses themselves.
Yes. Yeah. So among the things that we're going to do is to enhance the Restart grant. That's already there. It's between €2,000 and €10,000.
The one that's already
a lot of businesses excluded from it, and a lot of businesses, particularly in that kind of hospitality, leisure, arts, entertainment sector, that need more.
Yeah, the one that's already there. There's a €250 million fund, and only 88 million, just over a third of it, has actually been approved, which suggests that the terms are too restrictive or there are too many delays in processing the applications.
I actually think it's both. So we set aside €250 million for the Restart grant. So far, just under €90 million has been paid to 21,000 companies, but 37,000 have applied. So there's about 16,000, and I'm meeting them all the time. We're still waiting for the money.
So what size might that grant pot go to? From 250.
I don't want to give you that answer until we've decided what that is. But what it's going to be is an enhanced Restart grant. Eligibility will be widened, so some companies and some businesses that don't qualify now will, and also the quantum, the amount that businesses get, will increase. And I think that's important. And the other, so you've got the wage subsidy scheme, you'll have the Restart grant, and the third element, which I think are among the elements, maybe more than three, but from a business point of view, that I think would be particularly important, is what we do in terms of credit. What businesses are saying to me is that they will need access to credit, particularly as they reopen, as the payment breaks end, they're going to need to refinance. And they're saying to us that what's available at the moment, it's too short in terms of the length of term of the loan. The interest rate is too high, and we'll have legislation at Cabinet this week, which will bring in a new credit guarantee scheme, which will be much more favourable towards business.
Will it be 100% state guaranteed, or do you want the banks to take on some of the risk on that?
I think it's essential that the banks take on some of the risk. I know other countries have gone through 100% guarantees.
More loans will be turned down. If for example, it's guaranteed by 80% or 75% by the state and the rest by the bank, it gives the banks more flexibility to say, we're not prepared to take a risk in this current recession on you. More businesses will fail because fewer businesses will actually qualify for the loan.
And the flip side of that is that if the government gives the bank 100% guarantee, then there's no disincentive for them not to make reckless lending. And you may see a lot of loans being given to businesses that sadly are not viable. And the cost of that will be picked up by the taxpayer. And who's the taxpayer? It's the punter, the customer, the consumer and the businessman.
But by making that decision, is this part of a cull? Is this actually deciding on winners and losers then ultimately?
No, it's a sensible decision that we're willing to guarantee loans made by banks, which is a very significant thing to do. And it's going to be a much better loan guarantee than was there in the past from the point of view both of business and the banks. But we have to protect the taxpayer as well. And we have to make sure that the banks have skin in the game, that they don't make decisions that are reckless and they don't leave us with a bill at the end. And bear in mind who will pay the cost of that bill, not just your everyday taxpayer, your worker, your consumer, also businesses, because they're the ones who pay tax too. And, you know, I don't want to turn around to businesses in a year's time or 2 years' time and say, because of reckless lending by the banks to non-viable businesses, we're now going to increase taxes on your business that is viable.
Well, the banks made a decision to go ahead with the mortgage breaks and to charge accrued interest on those. They say that they did that in good faith, that they understood at that time their interpretation of the guidelines was that they had to charge accrued interest. There has since been clarification from the European Banking Authority and the Central Bank, which says that they don't have to do that. You've been accused of being naive at a meeting with the banks, that you allowed them to say they had to charge interest when there was a question mark over whether they correctly interpreted the guidelines or not.
Yeah, that meeting was back in May, I think, and on the last couple of days, I had to look back over my notes from the time and checked with other people who were at the meeting and the minutes that came from it. So essentially what the bank said to us was two things. They said to us that they couldn't waive the interest during that period because for two reasons. One was that there was a regulatory barrier to it. It has now been clarified that's not the case. Now, whether they believe that at the time or not is a question you'll have to ask them, but it has been clarified.
What do you believe? Do you accept their bona fides as to what they believed at that time? They say they acted in good faith. Others have said, look, this was a case of sufficient questions weren't asked about what the rules actually said.
Yeah, well, there were lots of questions asked, actually, but they essentially gave two reasons. One was regulatory, and it's now been clarified that's not the case, and I checked that even with Central Bank only yesterday. The other issue which they gave, and it's not an unreasonable one, is that if they extend the term of a loan, there are costs associated with that for the banks, both in terms of administrative costs and also the cost of finance. And the assurance that I sought from them was that they wouldn't in any way profiteer from this, that they wouldn't get any additional profit or additional margin from the fact that they have extended mortgage loans and business loans and personal loans.
But now it's been clarified and they don't have to.
I'm going to be pursuing that with them, by the way.
Yeah, now that they have clarified that they don't have to charge accrued interest, but they've said they're going to stick with doing that. Would you like to see them change their minds on that?
I think there's two elements of that. If you accept, and I do accept, that if a bank extends the term of a loan, that there is a cost associated with that. The cost has to be borne by somebody. So is it borne out of the bank's profits? Can't be. They're not going to make any profit this year or next year. Is it borne by the person who benefits from that loan break? Is it borne by everyone else? People who are still paying their mortgages, still paying their loans, who aren't availing of a payment break. So we need to be honest about that. If there's a cost, it has to be borne by somebody. Should it be borne by the taxpayer? I don't think so. But the question that I have a bigger concern about is, could banks and other lenders be trying to somehow, you know, make an additional profit out of this?
Do you believe they are?
They have form. Like, that's the truth of this. And, you know, we've seen the tracker mortgage scandal, which is still ongoing. We saw previous scandals in the past, and banks, when you tend to meet them, like to kind of, talk you down with regulatory gobbledygook. So, you know, unfortunately, my assumption in dealing with them is that I don't fully trust what they say until it's demonstrated otherwise. And I will be meeting with the CEOs of the major banks next week.
When
with the Minister of Finance.
When you look at the early days of the new coalition, Fianna Fáil have got off to a very shaky start. Pat Leahy in the Irish Times today is writing, describing it as a circular firing squad on themselves. When you look at it, what was your reaction to all of that? An element of solidarity or schadenfreude or a bit of both with your coalition partners?
You know, we've chosen to form a coalition with Fianna Fáil and the Greens, and we needed to work. So, you know, if Fianna Fáil or the Greens run into difficulties, that's a problem for us as well. You know, I don't take this view that, you know, that if a coalition partner is in trouble or is having difficulties, that that enhances their partners. It doesn't. It is a partnership, and we'll rise together or we'll fall together. So, but, you know, what I did reflect on is that there is a difference between government and opposition. And when you're in government, you're held to a totally different level of scrutiny and a different set of standards. You know, so we saw that Barry Cowan had his difficulties in the last week or two. We saw that Sinn Féin TD had a similar difficulty and had, if anything, done much worse. But nobody really cares about that because they're in opposition. And, you know, it's just, I'm not sure that's entirely fair, by the way, but that's the reality that I think maybe parties that haven't been in government for a long time, or particularly people who haven't been in government for a long time or ever, are now experiencing for the first time. Even the level of kind of abuse that you get on Twitter. I was talking to a former minister there who the other day, and he said, you know, the minute he ceased to be a minister, the abuse just stopped like that.
Right,
and now I see people who would have been lauded in opposition by the keyboard warriors now being subject to pretty toxic abuse. And that's wrong, in my view, that the opposition and the government are held to such a
different
standard.
Did you feel sorry for Micheál Martin in any way?
Not sorry for him. You know, Micheál has achieved what he sought to achieve, and he's become Taoiseach, and I look forward to working with him and his party for the next couple of years.
Okay. Leo Varadkar, Taoiseach and Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thanks for having me.